The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the Philadelphia Phillies, winning two games out of three. They now sit at 35-34, back over 500, and they occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are we doing?
I'm wonderful, Jason. I'd like to note that the Celtics are, as at the time of recording, 3-0 and on the verge of winning a championship, and I'm as big a Celtics fan as I am a Red Sox fan. So that has me already wonderful. And then the surprise of the season happens, and after getting four hit in game one, they find a way to win the series. If you're not in a good mood, you know, from my perspective anyways, it's a great time to be alive.
Anybody can beat a jet lagged baseball team. Come on. They just came back from London.
Okay, so it's going to be that kind of recording, Terry. I got it. At least thank you for letting me know at the outset, so now I can expect what's coming. All right. You can find me on Twitter at JT Schill. But no, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't done many of these where we won. So we're doing five up today. It's almost like I don't know how to do it because I think this is only my second time. So I'm excited.
I thought it was at JT Shill 20.
Terry, I was just making sure you were paying attention. So you passed that test.
Jeremy doesn't even know his own Twitter handle. And he thinks he's going to go toe-to-toe with me.
All right, here we go.
I'm full of piss and vinegar, everyone. Jason, you don't even need to introduce me. I've been running my mouth and probably do it the whole show. I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account can be found at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram. And we have a blog now in print form. It's on Substack, so just search Bastards of Boston Substack. It's panel style. It's not your normal type of blogging. We all weigh in on whatever the topic is, a few paragraphs a piece. So kind of a blogging with a twist.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely check that out. We got a couple of stuff up, things up there right now, some opinion pieces that we've been doing. So it's been a lot of fun, but Yeah, despite how it might sound, despite the tone to kick things off here, the Red Sox did actually win a series against a team over 500 for the first time this year. So pretty good. They're now in third place because the Rays are submarining somehow. The Blue Jays are still struggling. So Red Sox are in third place in their division. They're two games out of a wild card spot, back over 500. You know, they got the Yankees coming in this weekend. Obviously, they're red hot as well. The Phillies were too. So we'll see how that series goes. But Terry, I guess I'll just start with you. I mean, you take two out of three from the Phillies. You get three of their best pitchers. You don't get Ranger Suarez in this series. He's really one of their elite guys. But you face three of their best pitchers. They're missing some guys, but that lineup is still pretty potent. You take two out of three. Does it change how you feel at all about the team and sort of the trajectory of this season? Or are you just sitting here kind of like, yeah, big whoop. They're still going to get spanked this weekend.
I mean, we caught the Phillies at the right time, and our offense was really hot throughout the series, so we were able to capitalize on that. Nick Pivetta, 80 pitches through three innings. I mean, it's hard to feel pretty good about that. Cutter Crawford had his best outing in a while. I feel like he was kind of getting away with some middle-middle type stuff, but the Phillies weren't able to capitalize. Won the game regardless, but... And then even Tanner Houck today was at, I think, 74 pitches in the fourth inning and only five strikeouts. So eight hits, pitched around a lot of traffic. Not a terrible start by any means, but, you know, it was kind of a wonky series, and the offense made them pay. And Nola was hot garbage today. I don't know. I was watching the Phillies broadcast and they were wondering if he was tipping, but he was getting hit on every type of pitch, fastball, knuckle curve, everything. He couldn't sneak anything past the Red Sox offense. So that was, you know, beneficial to the Red Sox as well.
Jeremy, how about you? Because I mean, I feel pretty good about the series. I feel at least a little bit better heading into this weekend as a whole, because if you asked me on Monday, I would have told you they're going 0-6 this week between the Phillies and the Yankees. Now I'm not so sure. Maybe they end up at 500 at the end of the week. So I don't know about that, but how do you feel?
Yeah, on that last part, if they can win one game in New York and split these two series, I think that's better than expected. I had them getting swept by Philly. I think Philly's an absolute wagon. They're dealing with a couple injuries, and JT Realmuto hurts his knee, and he might need surgery. So maybe we caught him at a good time there. So if on the 1 to scale 10, medium is 5, I'm at like a 5.2. Like, there's reason for optimism. I don't know if it's smoke and mirrors, because, you know, the stat at the end of the game was that was the first series they won against the winning team all year. So I don't know that all of a sudden we're going to start beating good teams. I would predict that that's not going to happen, but we've been treading water. We've been waiting for something to go one way or the other. And maybe this series is it, especially if they can go to New York and take two out of three.
It's actually optimistic. It's at Fenway, actually.
I'm sorry. If they play New York and mm-hmm. win two or three, then, I mean, no one predicted them to win four out of those six games. So for right now, cautious optimism, I'm a 5.2.
Yeah, I think there's things you can take away from this series that you can feel good about in the long run. Certainly, there's some guys who have been off to a good start all year that continued that this series in the lineup. Tanner Houck still pitched pretty well. It wasn't his best performance, but he battled it out, kept you in it. You know, there's some other things that I think went well that you can really look at and say it's not a fluke. This is something that can be sustained, and we'll get into some of those things. So as you mentioned, we're, you know, doing a top five list this week, which we don't get to do a lot of those, but they did win two out of three, and there were some guys who really stood out. So let's get right into it. Terry, you are batting leadoff. Who do we got coming in at number five?
We have our second baseman du jour, who is Emmanuel Valdez. And Valdez had an interesting series. Didn't really do anything in the first game, but neither did the rest of the offense, really. 0-2 that game with a strikeout, but his one hit in the second game was a 2 RBI double. Officially got himself gunned down trying to leg out a triple, and then the same exact thing happened tonight. Double off the center field wall. Castellanos, I think it was, misplayed it, and then he gets gunned down again, but drove in, let's see how many runs tonight, just one on that one. So very productive. He does have a tendency of being kind of hot when he's first called up. When we acquired him in, let's see, 2022, I mean, he was robust, put up some big numbers, and we were thinking he was going to be the better of the two between him and Abreu. It was looking like he was going to be the prize of that package, but he has a tendency to fizzle. So second base has been unsettled since the end of the Pedroia era, quite frankly, and we don't know when we're getting Vaughn Grissom back, but I'd be surprised if it's before July 1st. And we'll just take what we can get.
Jeremy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's just nice to get some positive contributions from someone playing that position. And I agree with Terry. It's been an unsettled position since Pedroia. Obviously, we got spoiled there because he was as good as he was for as long as he was. But this is, you know, another reason to be optimistic. If you can start getting some production at a second base, I mean, you know, I don't mind some of the aggression on the base pass. The ball today was misplayed. I think he had a reason to think he could get to third. They just had a pretty clean, you know, relay to third, and he was out pretty easily. But we were up, I think, a bunch of runs at that point. It didn't kill you. I mean, you don't want to be consistently making those mistakes. But, you know, production on any level from that spot's a positive. So I'm happy to hear it. And if Grissom were to come back soon, as of right now, I'd say that Valdez should be getting the far majority of the at-bats out of that spot.
Yeah, I'm not exactly itching to get Grissom back anytime soon. I want to see Grissom get healthy and then, you know, get some at-bats regular time down in Worcester and really get that bat going again before I'm even considering calling him back up, because it feels like they keep trying to rush it with him and it's just not working. With Valdez, I'm encouraged by the swing. He's going the other way now. He's not trying to pull everything. He does have power when he pulls it. So I think when he first got here, that's what he was kind of relying on. But he has the power to go the other way too. And we saw that this series. He was tagging the monster this series. So that was really good to see. There's still some things like defensively, I wish he was a little more stout. There were a lot of, you know, there were line drives, but there were a lot of balls that got past him that I think, you know, in at least an average or maybe above average defensive second baseman is able to knock those down or get to them. He really couldn't. So the defensive liability is still there. Obviously he made the base running mistake trying to stretch that double into a triple, but you know, the Red Sox were rallying at that point. They put up a bunch of runs. So you don't really hate it in that situation, but it is one of those things where they'll have to pull him aside and go, hey, just next time, just take the two bases and let's keep the offense going. Don't try and be a hero and stretch everything into a triple. So that was, you know, that was just a rookie thing. He's a young kid. He's still learning. I do think the swing has improved since he was down in Worcester, but like I said, there's obviously some things defensively and just baseball IQ wise that he could get a lot better at. So for now, I think he should be your everyday second baseman. I don't see why he wouldn't be, unless he really proves that he can't hit lefties at all, or unless, as Terry said, he can go into those cold streaks. And if he goes into an 0-for-24 streak, then okay, maybe he's not quite there yet. But otherwise, I want to see more of him.
So three things real quick. The first two, super rapid fire. His Emmanuel Valdez's stats in Worcester this year, he's hitting .230, not great, with a .360 on base. I'd love to see the walks at the major league level. We're not really seeing that. He's got 6 home runs and 10 ribbies, but I think that just goes to the point where you're just simply going to ride the hot hand. Second rapid fire thing, I don't think Vaughn Grissom has a future with the Red Sox. I haven't said that yet. I'm there now. One of the reasons I believe that, and this is my third thing, there's a guy who just got promoted to Worcester from AA, and he is tearing the absolute cover off the ball in Worcester. Only 30 at-bats, tiny sample size, but he's hitting .400 with a .514 on base, a slugging percentage of .633, 2 home runs so far, 8 runs driven in. I'm talking about Nick York. He was our first round draft pick in 2020, I believe, and was pretty good in single A and then kind of sputtered the last couple of years above that. But he seems to be figuring it out, and he's only 22. So he was really young when we drafted him. So I don't know if it'll continue, but he is a second baseman. And we're going to talk about another player later that's been pretty impressive. But perhaps by hook or by crook, maybe the long-term forecast for second base is looking a little sunnier.
I don't necessarily disagree with your point, because I think Grissom is tied to Sale. I mean, we're going to see him again. You know, I don't have any doubt about that. My thing is, have a quick trigger. So if in a week Valdez can't get on base, couple bad errors, not being a difference maker, then I wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger. I don't know if they're willing to bring York up or not. Obviously, those numbers are smoke and mirrors because they're so ridiculous right now. But if he's playing well and you can bring him up and have him be a positive, I wouldn't hesitate rotating that position until you find somebody. We're stuck in the middle. We need sparks. And right now, Valdez gave us one for this series.
Yeah, right now, Valdez is your spark. So, like you said, you ride with him until he starts to fall off the bandwagon a little bit, and, you know, it goes into one of those cold streaks. But the Red Sox depth at second base is actually pretty good. It's remarkable how, like, they've actually found some guys. Nick York is one of them. Vaughn Grissom, if he can get healthy again and get back to the hitter that he was with Atlanta, that's another guy. Again, he's only 22, so he's still pretty young. And then they just promoted this kid, Christian Campbell, to AA, who's been tearing the cover off the ball in Greenville before that. He just got promoted to Portland, and he's still hitting there too.
He's a second baseman?
He is, yeah.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
He can play a couple of different positions, but he's second base primarily, I believe. So, okay. And again, I think he's another right-handed hitter, 21 years old. So they've got some options there. They can absolutely, you know, if York is still doing his thing in Worcester and Valdez starts to slip, I agree with Jeremy. I think at that point, don't rush Grissom back, because I think he needs a while to get healthy and kind of get back in his groove. Give York a shot. Get that spark from him.
Is York on the 40 man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That would be my only hesitation is, I mean, we have people we can move on from, but if he's already on the 40 man, I think he's closer, you know?
Yeah. And just a reminder, I guess, Grissom has options, so he doesn't even have to come back to the major league level. They can have him work on some stuff down in Worcester if need be.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sounds like that would frankly make sense.
Yeah, Grissom's got options, and he's still young. So, yeah, give him the time and roll with the young guys for now, for sure. So, moving on, we'll go to number 4 on our top 5. Jeremy, what we got coming in at number 4?
So, just generally speaking, the bullpen was great in this series. I'll start with Thursday's game. Keller comes in against a really difficult Phillies lineup. 3 innings, 2 hits, no runs. 46 pitches really sets you up to have potentially some success in against New York. because no one threw, except for Boozer, no one threw more than once in this series. And everything except for Keller was limited to an inning. We pitched 10 bullpen innings in this series, 2 earned runs, 1 with Jansen, 1 with Kelly on Wednesday. But, I mean, you couldn't have asked for more in this series, given that the starting, no one went deep. You know, how can Crawford went 6, but Pivetta has a short start? You think this is potentially disastrous. Keller does what he does today, you know, and they put you in a position now, as it were. I think we're going to go against New York, not hit, and they're going to hit because that's what they do, and it's going to be ugly. But at least on paper, you're set up to throw who you want besides Keller, who shouldn't be pitching in that series anyways. The one guy I want to highlight, Bernardino, an inning, 1 hit. His ERA is now down below a run, 0.99, and his whip is actually higher at 1.02. This guy has been just absolutely phenomenal. His toughness in big moments to get out of it and trust his stuff is really, really exceptional. He's fun to watch pitch. Slayton's another guy. You have a certain level of trust when he's in the game. 1 inning, 1 hit through 16 pitches. His ERA is down to 2.76 with a 0.98 whip. So, I just don't think you can say more about the bullpen. This is a absolutely fantastic series from that perspective.
Terry.
Just because I could get called out on it on social media, I did misspeak. Nick York, not yet on the 40 man. I think he'll have to be on it by next year, though, or go in the Rule 5, which obviously would not happen. But the quick solution to that, DFA Romy. You could DFA Jamie Westbrook if you wanted to have York up bad enough. So
there's a number of candidates. Let's not forget about Dahlbeck.
Dahlbeck as well, absolutely. Yep. All right, so getting back to the bullpen, it was nice to see Keller go a few innings. I mean, he's been tattooed a couple of times since we pulled him out of, I think, wasn't it the Pittsburgh scrap heap? I forget where we got him out of, but... I'm not optimistic about him long term, but who knows? So we'll just see how it goes. The one guy who's interesting to me, and I'm not ready to say, you know, he's got a long term future yet, but Cam Boozer has been quietly getting the job done. And whether it's one inning or a couple innings, he was a starter prior to us calling him up in Worcester and was filthy down there, especially I think with his changeup. But solid. Zach Kelly continues to be solid. He could be your seventh inning guy of the future, possibly higher. We'll see how he continues to develop. And Justin Slayton, you know, he's a popular guy this year. He's a Rule 5 guy, just like Garrett Whitlock was. So for some reason, the bullpen, I go into every season with a lot of optimism that the bullpen's going to be good. And the only season I was kind of wrong about that was 2022. We were just ass that whole year. And last year we stabilized it with Kenley and Martin, and we've had some younger arms, kind of integrated in since then. Another guy who continues to be really good is Weissert, by the way. But I just, for some reason, I just never worry about it, though. It hasn't been a problem for a long time.
Yeah, oddly enough, the only guy in that bullpen that I don't trust is the closer. It's Kenley. Everyone else that, you know, takes the ball out of that bullpen, I feel pretty good about. Now, obviously, you know, Brad Keller, okay, I don't really count him because he's like your long relief innings eater. Like, I don't count him as like a true reliever in that sense, but everyone else I feel pretty good about. Weissert, Zach Kelly, you've got two lefties that are really good right now with Bernardino and Cam Boozer. Slayton's a young kid who he had a little bit of a rough patch there, but he's still pretty good. I think their bullpen is fine. Is it elite? No, I don't think it's elite, but it's good enough. It's good enough, especially with what they're getting from the starting rotation so far this year. Like, you know, Nick Pivetta usually is going to give you more than 4 innings. This week, he just happened to not – he didn't have it. He was really struggling, and the bullpen came in, and they were fine. You know, so you, generally, though, you're going to get innings from Crawford, from Pivetta. I think Houck is starting to ramp up there too. Bayo, if he can stay out of trouble early, can give you some innings. So you don't need your bullpen to be elite. You just need them to be good enough, and that's what they are. And you're doing all this without Chris Martin right now, who – you know, hopefully is able to get back and, you know, get back to his old form. We don't know. He's dealing with a whole different struggle. So you have no idea how that's going to go. But if he can get back to his old form too, your sixth, seventh, eighth innings are solid. It's really just Kenley that, you know, you don't know which Kenley you're going to get. He's either going to get, you know, a three out save on like 10 pitches, or he's going to completely fall apart. You know, it just depends on how he slept the night before, God knows with him. So, but the rest of the bullpen, I feel pretty good about. I really don't have an issue with any of them.
So just if anybody wants to know exactly, and I, of course I just had to look this up, the Red Sox bullpen ranks seventh in all of Major League Baseball with an even 350 ERA. Cleveland is number one, Dodgers second, Yankees third, Orioles fourth, which surprises me, not having their closer. Just seems like it's been a little unsettled, but fourth place nonetheless. And I mean, where if we were 30 points better, we would be in third place. So, I mean, it's not a huge gap there.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well if you're anywhere near that company, because those are some really, those are elite bullpens, at least those top two or three. So if you're close to those guys, your bullpen's doing something right. So they've definitely been a strong point this year, for sure. So with that, we'll move to someone in the starting lineup. So, Terry, who do we got coming in at number three?
Oh, geez. I knew I was going to get stuck with this guy. So three on the midweek top five this week is going to be Tyler O'Neill, fresh off whatever his recent injury was. I can't even keep track of him at this point, but...
Jesus.
Yeah,
just, this is supposed to be a positive. This is called a top five, Terry.
He gets a lot of boo-boos
dealing with.
Lots of boo-boos with O'Neill. Anyway, so where the hell do I have him? Oh, right here. So he sat out game one, and never mind. I won't even get into that. It was an Alex Cora thing. But he comes in game two, gets an RBI double in game two, and then tonight just hit a light tower monster home run, which basically put the game out of reach. The Red Sox were up 4-0, then Kyle Schwarber happened, and it was a one-run game, and then O'Neill, I want to say another run or two scored, and then he hits his three-run blast, and it was like 8-3 and over. So he definitely ran into one, still had a couple of strikeouts, but like I said, it was a wonky series, and O'Neill crushed it, literally.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, it was the timing of the hit, too. So the momentum was gone. It was all of a sudden 4-3. And then he just hits an absolute monster home run, gets the momentum right back. Credit to Houck, comes back the next inning, gets through the inning efficiently. And we were in total control from that point on. So the timing of the hit is just as big as how far he hit it. If that was a single, we were at second and third with two outs at the time. It would have been as important as it were he hits a light tower home run. I will say this, because Terry seemingly roots against him.
We need
something from this player. He doesn't have to be as good as he was in the first month, but there has to be some level of consistency because we don't have enough right-handed hitting. He's going to hit in the middle of the lineup. He has to hit. And I'm okay with the strikeouts if he's going to go back to hitting a home run a week. But, you know, he makes a running play, I think, in the seventh or eighth inning. snow cones a ball, catches it, and then they pan to him when he resets to his location, and he's like rubbing his knee, and I'm like, Jesus, like, don't, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? And we got Yoshida back, so there's no spot for a DH. So now he has the extra pressure of playing on the knee and in the outfield. That was a somewhat routine play for a major league player. It's just like how close he made it. It shouldn't have been that close. And then he's rubbing his knee. I'm just like, so I'm not disagreeing with you with the outcome, Terry, but I'm at least rooting for the guy to stay healthy and start hitting on a somewhat consistent basis. Cause one of your biggest issues last week when we spoke was who's protecting Devers. Cause I think at one game, Westbrook was hitting behind him. At least O'Neill has the threat of going big fly, and that has an effect on the pitches Devers are going to see in certain circumstances. So, you know, with that said, I also think Wong could be that guy, not on the list, 2-for-6 this series. But O'Neill just offers that big hit potential every time he's up, and today was a prime example of when that happens.
O'Neill is going to be frustrating throughout the course of an entire season. I think we all knew that going in. It's a big reason why the Cardinals were ready to deal him away. And we gave up like pretty much nothing to get him. We gave up that Nick Robertson guy who sucks. So, I mean, you gave up really, you got him for a song from St. Louis. And it's because they knew. They knew what we are now experiencing, which is that, yeah, he's pretty much going to get hurt every other week. He's going to have a knee or a hamstring or something, but he's still so important because it's not just the right-handed bat, it's the pure power that he provides. Because outside of Devers, you don't have power in your lineup right now. Connor Wong has 5 home runs on the year, but I can't remember the last time he hit one. It's been a while, and he's your catcher. Like, you're not going to depend on him to hit 25 home runs. Like, it's just not, that's not realistic. Until Casas comes back, they don't have a ton of power. Abreu has a little bit, but he's hurt right now too. He'll be back soon, which is good, but he's a lefty. So, and he doesn't hit left-handed pitching well at all. Corey usually benches him for that. So you need the power that he provides. And not to like cross sports, but it kind of reminds me of what the Celtics are doing with Porzingis right now, who's got, you know, a calf injury and an ankle injury. It's like, just put him out there and get as much out of him as you can. You know he's going to get hurt, but you push him to the max and just, if he helps you win a series like O'Neill did here, you'll take it. If O'Neill has to go on the IL in 2 weeks because his knee is still bothering him, okay. I mean, that's the reality. It's not fun. It's not, you know, an enviable position to be in, but it's kind of what you signed up for. Everyone knew the reputation of this guy. He's had injury problems his whole career. So, you know, it's what they bargained for. But when he's healthy and he's on, he can do stuff like he did in the series where he's hitting moonshots over the monster and really providing a threat from the right-handed side to protect Rafael Devers and to give the lineup that pop that they're really kind of missing. So for now, I'll take it. You know, talk to me in August when he's back on the IL and the Red Sox are maybe out of the wild card hunt. And then I'll say, yeah, no, he was a waste of time. And who knows? Like, who knows if he'll even be on the roster in August? Because
0% chance.
Right. Because if he can stay healthy at least a little bit and continue to hit power, he's going to be a trade target. Some other team, you know, again, as Jeremy always says, all it takes is one stupid team. Some stupid team's going to call and say, you know what? Yeah, he gets hurt a lot, but we really need that bat for our postseason push. And we're willing to give up, a couple of prospects for him. And, you know, if you're Breslow, you kind of have to take that call and think about it seriously. He's only here for a year, so you might as well at that point. So I don't know what O'Neill's long-term future is. I kind of agree with you. I don't think he'll be on the roster by the time he gets August. But at least for now, he's helping you win games, and he's helping you stay relevant because this year, that's the best you can ask for. The Red Sox kind of punted on this season, and the team is somehow – fighting their way through it. They're back over 500 and they're somehow sniffing a wild card spot. If O'Neill can help you do it and he can stay healthy at least a little bit until the trade deadline, you'll take it. And then from there, you can decide, is he worth keeping or is he someone that we should ship away? I agree. I think they'll trade him, but it will really depend on how the next month and a half goes. So, I think he's gone by August, but at least for now, take what you can get because he's given you something.
I mean, the Phillies themselves are going to need an outfielder, most likely. The Atlanta Braves definitely need an outfielder. So there's going to be a huge market, and it's just, are we going to get a bag of baseballs if he continues to get hurt? Or are we going to get, you know, at least a mid-level prospect? That's the only question.
Yeah, yeah, the return is a huge part of it, because if you're not going to get anything of real value, like, then, I don't know, maybe you don't make the deal, maybe you figure something out, you know, beyond that. But I think they'll probably end up getting something they want.
The only way you would keep him is if you planned on perhaps giving him the qualifying offer, but that's $20 million compared to the $5 million that he's getting. Like, that doesn't make sense, so.
No, no, and I don't want them investing long-term in any sort of extension talks with him, so.
That's why we kept Bogarts, well, maybe partially. You were going to give him the qualifying offer, so you were going to get whatever number pick that was from the Padres.
Yep.
But.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how that all goes in a couple months. So moving on, another member of the lineup who's been red hot lately, coming in at number two on the top five, it is David Hamilton. This is a surprise. This kid, I honestly, when he first came here in that trade and, you know, the first couple of times we saw him, I said, this guy is nothing more than a backup infielder pinch runner. That's it. Like, that's all he's going to be. He, you know, he just looked undersized and overmatched to me when he first got here. He looks much better so far this season, and his last 24 games, he's hitting .355. I mean, he is putting the ball in play. He's utilizing his speed more defensively. Again, just like Valdez, there's a lot left to be desired there. Every time he has to like wind up and throw overhand to first base, it's like, is it going to get there? Is it going to go sailing? Like, what, you know, what's it going to be? He's not very good moving on the run, trying to, you know, turn double plays. So defensively, I think he's lacking. I don't think shortstop is really his natural spot. I think he's a second baseman, and that's it. But because you can't play Valdez at short, he has to occupy that shortstop position. He's not a complete disaster, but it does leave a lot to be desired. But at the plate, he is starting to really hit the ball well. And he's, even when he makes an out, he hits the ball hard. You know, he's not rolling over to second base. He's not making weak contact. He'll line out, and that's fine because he'll still smoke the ball. He still makes really good contact. So I don't know what they've done with him in terms of his training and his progression at the plate, but he is a completely different hitter from what we saw when he first came here. He's got a little bit of pop, too. He's got four homers. I mean, so for a guy his size, you know, he can get it over the fence, too. So that the offensive progression has been great to see. Obviously, the speed is still there. He can utilize that to his advantage. He really helps sort of that the way the Red Sox have to play offense right now, which is they have to manufacture runs. They've got to get the sort of conveyor belts of offense going. Because like I said, with O'Neill, it's like O'Neill and Devers are the only two guys that really possess that consistent power threat right now. So the Red Sox offense is doing it different ways. You saw it in this last game against Phillies, five doubles in a row. I mean, that was just insane that they were doing that, but they've got the speed and they're making hard contact. That's how they're going to have to do it. If Hamilton's a part of that, I'm all for it. Again, just you don't have Story for the rest of the year. I think we can all agree Rafaela is better served being in center field. You know, second base, we talked about it. It can be a bit of a revolving door, but if Hamilton can lock down that shortstop position and continue to hit, you know, is he going to hit, again, like I said, .355 over his last 24 games? Is that going to last? No, probably not. There's going to be some regression. But if he can finish the year hitting .265, .270, steal a lot of bases, you know, have a good on base and just kind of be a productive member of the order, even if it's down towards the bottom, you'll absolutely take that. Because again, this guy, you know, when he first got here, I don't think anyone really thought he would be an everyday player. I think we all sort of thought he's a utility guy, pinch runner, whatever. Now he's proving to be more than that. So it, just like Valdez, just like a lot of these guys, you take what you can get right now, because with the amount of holes in your roster and the holes in your lineup due to injury, if this guy can hit like this, you'll absolutely take it all the time. So been great to see. It's been exciting for him. He's definitely taken a big step forward this year. You know, we'll see how long it lasts. But for now, I don't want him out of the lineup. I just keep him in there. And I don't even mind him hitting number two behind Duran. I think that speed combo is pretty threatening to a lot of teams. So I have no problem with him staying there, too.
And the only problem with that last point is you don't want to stack lefties together. So the biggest thing for me with Hamilton's success, I think, boils down to he just seems to be a more confident player, like he belongs. There was a segment last week where he was mic'd up, and the way he was communicating on the field made it sound like, I'm not saying he's like on his way to being a leader of the team, but he believes he belongs based on the clips I saw. And that's sometimes all you really need. You know, and that might be part of Valdez's success, although I think it's too early to say that. The trickle-down effect on the defense up the middle is just so tremendous for the overall success of the Red Sox. We talked about the starting pitching has regressed to the mean, but we're still a top rotation. The bullpens, you said seventh in earned run average and had a great weekend. We're going to get inconsistent offense, just generally speaking. If you can play consistent defense up the middle, it's just – so Raphael is now in center, who is just that plus-plus defender. Duran, who's not and doesn't have a great arm, moves to left, so you can kind of hide his weakness a little bit. You know, it just – the trickle-down effect is extremely important. I found a tweet today. I'm just going to read you a couple stats. So this was before today's game. So in his last five games – Hamilton is 2-for-4, 2-for-5, 2-for-4, 2-for-4, and then today he's 1-for-5. He's got 3 steals in his last 5 games because he had one today. He's got the home run. He's got a double, so he's hitting for power. Now, here's what blew me away. Since May 17th, which is almost a month ago, 24 games, here's Hamilton's rankings in the American League. Stolen bases first. 4th in average, 10th in OBP, 8th in slugging, and 7th in OPS. Now, that's not who he is because Terry, in his overly optimistic, happy, you know, self, responds to me earlier today with these stats with nothing more than, quote, career 259 minor leaguer. So I do
just
think
to clarify that wasn't out of pessimism. That was like, where the hell is this coming from? Was what I.
Well, it was also a statement of fact because, as it were, it appears to be true.
It was, yeah.
But my point in bringing that up is no one's expecting him to be, you know, in the top 10 in all these key offensive categories. But with the trickle-down effect of the defense I've already talked about, any offensive input from that position's a bonus. And it's starting to fill the back end of the lineup, unless he's going to hit now. They're starting to move him, you know, up the lineup. But if they're going to put him in the bottom third of the lineup, it stops that black hole that's been the bottom third of the lineup for the whole year. And so when I'm talking about the pitching's good, the bullpen's good, we're pretty good on the bases with Duran and Hamilton. And when we get Abreu back, Rafael, if he can get on base, like we have speed and athleticism. If we can just roll the lineup over a little bit more consistently and score a few more runs, I think we can win a few more games. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to happen because, you know, again, I don't, you know, Rafaela 4-for-10, Valdez 3-for-7. You know, I don't know if that's going to continue to happen, but this player is tremendously exciting. Gives me a little bit of the Pedroia vibes as far as smaller player that almost outperforms his body type. But you know, I couldn't be happy, and I'm happy for him too. I mean, obviously he's a young player. He's trying to find his way, and it seems like he might be off to starting a career for himself. With that said, now that I've said all that, he's going to go 0-for-10 and it's going to be a nightmare. That's not what I hope happens though.
Terry.
So this run has really started, you know, early in May. This is a 6-week breakout that we've been witnessing, and if you go back just the last 30 days, he's hitting 341 with a 378 on base, an OPS of 931. That ranks second behind Rafi Devers. I'm just going to say it. I mean, he's been your best player for the last 6 weeks. And I keep waiting.
I don't disagree with that.
I keep waiting for it to slow down, and it's just not. He just keeps stepping up, keeps essentially being the savior. I mean, if you think about it, aside from, you know, the home runs, he's essentially picked up the ball where Casas left off. Like, he's basically taken over. Aside from the home runs, I think Casas would probably double him at least in that category. But he's given you what Tristan would have given you. And let's not forget, he is playing short, and sometimes it's not pretty, as you guys have said. But he's a second baseman, naturally. So if perhaps next season comes along, and I mean, I almost hate the fact that Trevor Story is coming back, because you know Meyer's not that far away. But conceivably, you could have him playing second base for a while next year. Now, the downside to that, if that were to happen, well, actually, Story's a right-hander, so. But Devers, Meyer, Hamilton, and Casas, that would be all four lefties if that's how it shook out. I don't think Meyer will be up until at least May or June next year. I think that's the earliest it would be in his case. But still, I mean, I don't know where the ceiling is. Hamilton was never really projected to be anything more than a utility guy off the bench if he did make it to the major leagues. And this breakout he's on, whether his future is in Boston or perhaps another team, like, he could be locking a productive career down here. His future could be bright regardless of which team it's on. Like, teams are going to take notice. And I don't think, even if he continues this pace up until late July, I don't think his trade value will be like sky high. It wouldn't be like Jaron Duran level. I don't think it would even necessarily make sense to trade him either. So the timing, unfortunately, isn't right to get a haul. Maybe next winter, though. Maybe if he just crushes it for the whole second half, maybe you get a package for him this winter. That could happen and would make a lot more sense. But we're just going to take what we can get. And the dude, I mean, hitting him out of the two hole, Duran and Hamilton right now, that's Ellsbury and Pedroia in the one and two hole, the same type of impact. So it's been fun to watch. Who batted second tonight? Was it Hamilton? He didn't bat second one of the games. I'm trying to figure out who it was. Who was it?
He batted second tonight. He also batted second in the first game of the series.
It was Ref Snyder game two.
Oh, Ref Snyder game two. That's why I couldn't figure it out.
They had the lefty on the mound. It was Sanchez that night.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So anyway, I could keep going on. I'm pleasantly surprised, and, you know, it's going to be fun to see where it goes.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, with that, we'll move to number one on our top five, a guy who is always exciting to watch. So, Jeremy, who do we got coming in at number one?
Jaron Duran. Seems like he's always on one of these lists, and I think that just goes to show you how important he is to if the Red Sox go or don't. The way Terry ended that last segment is a perfect lead-in to Duran, because Hamilton, with his ability to affect the game on the bases – and put pressure on a starting pitcher just because that guy's on first base. We didn't have anywhere near this level of depth until now. And if Hamilton can stay at this pace, then I think it really goes a long way with Duran and Hamilton effectively doing the same thing, which is spraying the ball to all fields and then creating havoc. Getting first to third on a ball at the center fielder where most players can't do that, turning a double into a triple, the constant threat to steal. Now, with that said, as good as Hamilton is, this team goes with Jaron Duran. He is one of the four hits for the Red Sox. He's 1-4 in the first game, and then he's 3-5 and 2-4 with a total six hits and 13 at bats. He's got three RBIs. He scores three runs. He adds a walk. He only struck out once, a couple of doubles, just a game wrecker, just an absolute game wrecker. And he has five hits in the two games we win where we combine for 17 runs. It's not by accident, guys. Offensively, this team goes when Jarren Duran goes. I've spoken so much about the player. I think I pretty summed that up pretty quickly. So I'm going to move on. One of the interesting things that went in the commentary today with Merlone was mentioning that he believes he's at least a candidate to be an all-star. And I hadn't thought of that. Merlone was saying that he was being held back by hitting in the 250s as of a few days ago, but now he's up in the 270s. And I'm sure the league has paid attention and, you know, maybe he is, you know, maybe he is. As far as his impact for the Red Sox, he's obviously Devers is going to go ahead of him, but he's certainly a candidate in my mind.
Terry.
For some reason, he's still not stealing second base at will. There was a lot of talk earlier in the year. Could he lead the majors in stolen bases? And for some reason, and it seems to be by design, he's just not stealing as much. But that would have really bolstered his case to make the All-Star team. He can still go nuts for the next 3 weeks and probably still get there. Especially if he can do it against New York. I haven't looked at the pitching matchups yet, but do it against that team. I mean, those games are going to be the highest rated games this year in terms of viewership. So especially, well, Friday nights won't be, because of at least in the Boston market with the Celtics. But he's hitting 272. I meant to pull up his last year's numbers, but he's basically right on par with how he ended last season. And he's only really had one lengthy slump. He was like 0 for 14 at one point, I think towards the end of May. Snapped out of it. This series was, 6 for 13. Driving in runs, only struck out once the whole series. That this dude used to be a strikeout machine, and you're not seeing it from him as much. The plate discipline is a lot better, and he's just a really good all-around player. I never thought I would say this, and going back to just before last season, I remember not even jokingly, I mean, I guess I was just kind of being a smartass, but I was saying he's bad at everything. He's a bad defender. He's a strikeout machine. He's got no future in Major League Baseball. And then Adam Duvall gets hurt. Duran gets called up. And it seems like the rest is history. It really seems that way. So it'll be interesting. Breslow's going to get the most phone calls on Jarren Duran. I promise you. It's just whether or not he can pull the trigger. And I don't know if I want him to or not. I mean, if it's an offer he can't refuse, then he probably needs to make the deal, but we'll see. I don't know that this front office wants to take that type of a PR hit, you know, the way this year has gone. But we can't keep all these lefties. I'm going to keep saying it and saying it and saying it until the bold trade that nobody sees coming actually happens, because it's going to happen. Maybe not in July, maybe not this winter, but I would say before the end of next season, there's going to be a painful trade that happens in We'll see who ends up being in it.
Yeah, Duran is going to produce, or he's going to present a big problem for the front office in terms of what they actually want to do with him, because he is older. He's older than, you know, most of your young talent that's up right now. But that also benefits the front office because they really don't have to pay him in his prime years. They can kind of just they don't have to give him a contract extension. He's got arb years, you know, at the wazoo. So he's cheap and he's your leadoff hitter right now, and he is the catalyst of your offense. So I think you're right. I think they will get a lot of calls about him because everyone around baseball is going to go, well, he's blocking Roman Anthony. So what do you want for him? You know, at some point you're going to run out of space in that outfield. And that's going to be hard for Breslow to turn that down, especially if a team gives you, you know, a top pitching prospect in return or something like that. So that will present a problem at some point. I don't think it's going to happen this year. You know, they'll probably get calls at the deadline, but I don't think they'll deal him this year. I think they're going to wait until at least the winter or next year if they're going to make a deal like that. But he should be an all-star. He absolutely should. The way he's playing this year, the way he's handled that leadoff position, he should be an all-star. I don't think he will be because it's a stupid fan vote, and Red Sox fans are so checked out right now, they're not going to vote. So he's going to lose out to, like, Luis Robert and, you know, all these other big-name outfielders who probably don't deserve to be there over him, but they will because, again, it's a stupid system. But he should be an all-star, and I just – everything about his game has – just so drastically improved over the last 2 years. You know, he's hitting the ball the other way. He's shown a little bit of pop. I don't think he's ever going to be a big time power hitter. I think he's going to be a 10 to 15 homer kind of guy, but that's okay. Hitting out of the leadoff spot, I don't care about that. If he wants to lead the league in doubles and triples and potentially stolen bases, I'm fine with that. I don't care. You can hit 7 home runs in a season. And if you lead in those categories, I'm good with it. Defensively, he's gotten a little bit better. The arm is never really going to be there, but, you know, that's okay. There's a lot of outfielders who have bad arms, and there's a lot of outfielders with cannons for arms that, you know, it doesn't matter. They don't know where it's going when they throw it. So I'm okay with that. If he's, you know, if his instincts and everything are getting better in the outfield and he's running routes better, I'd much rather that than having a cannon for an arm. So I think defensively he's improved. The plate discipline is a big one. The fact that that is starting to go up is huge for his game. If he can start drawing walks and not striking out 2 to 3 times a game, that's going to be massive for him. Because if he can get on base and if they kind of let him loose and let him run a little bit more, he can really wreak havoc. And, you know, the walk he drew against Nola in that final game was BS. It shouldn't have been a walk. It was a horrible call, but whatever. You take what the umpire gives you, right? So, you know, it adds to the walk tally, and he's not striking out as much. So I think all of that is just huge for his game. If he can just cut down on the strikeouts, take more walks, get on base more as a leadoff hitter, and really unleash his speed, I mean, he could probably be the best leadoff hitter in baseball if he really gets to that point, or at least one of the best, top three, top five. So
that was bold.
I mean, look around the league. There's a lot of good leadoff hitters. I get it, but he's with what he does and every aspect of his game, he's up there for sure.
So the one aspect of his game I don't like is his arm. But I don't mind it as much, and this is why this is tied to Hamilton when he's in left field, not center. So, you know, if he's going to be our left fielder, it bothers me a lot less. It just does.
Yeah.
That's not unique to our history, though. Ellsbury didn't have an arm. Damon didn't have an arm. You know, I think you can get by on that. He checks off a lot of other boxes. His current triples total is at 10. Anthony Volpe and Bobby Witt are tied for second at 7. And Witt had 11 last year. It led the league in. You got to go all the way back to 2018 to get as high as 12. That was Ketel Marte. So if he can get to 15, that's impressive. And one last thing on the trade front with him, if three teams come calling, he's not getting dealt. There's not going to be enough competition between the three. If 10 team comes calling, 10 or 12 teams, that's how the market will develop. Because they'll be bidding against each other, and then that's when Breslow has to make the tough decision. Are we getting a big enough haul here? And, you know, we'll see.
And keep in mind, I mean, Roman Anthony is the prize prospect that he's supposedly blocking. He's had his struggles so far in double A's, dealt with some injuries too. You know, we talked about him last week on last week's show. The number one prospect in baseball, Jackson Holliday, since being sent down, is hitting 181 in AAA. He has gone completely backwards. So for all of you who are saying get rid of Duran because Anthony is the future, be very, very careful because this kind of thing can happen. Do I think Holliday can turn it around at some point? Probably. Yeah, and same with Roman Anthony. He might turn around too. But be very careful because you're kind of, if you want to trade Duran, you're trading away the devil you know for the devil you don't. Because Roman Anthony might come up here and completely suck. And he might not be cut out for the major leagues. So, you know, that's going to present the challenge for the front office. If they do get those 10 to 12 teams calling at the deadline or this winter for Jaron Duran, you know what he can do at the big league level. He's shown it now. Do you want to get rid of that and put all your eggs in the Roman Anthony basket? Because, you know, Jackson Holliday is not the first, nor will he be the last number one prospect to struggle and go backwards.
Anthony, so. I think, got hurt. I think he got hit by a pitch or something. But he's actually come on pretty strong as of late, hitting 273 with a 388 on base. So he's on the upswing, but we'll see what, you know, we'll see what develops with him.
Yep. Only time will tell. So, and there's certainly a lot of time until he gets called up. So hopefully Duran's not going anywhere anytime soon, but obviously things can change in a hurry. So at least enjoy what he's doing while he's here, because it's really fun to watch. And he helps you win a lot of series like this one. So hopefully he has a good weekend against New York. So with that, we will wrap things up here. Speaking of that series, we will have our Bastards series prediction show ready for you before the Yankee series. We'll give our picks for the weekend. And we also have another episode of Clown Takes coming your way this weekend as well. So might be targeting a few uniformed players in this one who have been yapping a little too much. So we'll see how that goes. But keep an eye out for that as well. And then, of course, the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Yankee series. So everyone have a great weekend. Go Celtics, go Red Sox, and we will talk to you all later. Take care.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water